You could have been a supporter of any football team. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. You could have been following the champions of the Champions League. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. What's all this stuff you're giving us? There's just one team for me, and that's the town where I come from. In Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 73 of Ravens Weekly, sponsored by our good friends at GPM Group, specialist fire door manufacturers. Delighted to be joined by Jeff and James. Hello, guys.
It should be Ravens Bumpy, to be fair.
Yeah, looking at a new name. Well, actually, I think we're looking at getting back into the swing of it. But how are both of us? All right?
Good, Matt. Good, Matt.
Yeah, very well. Yeah, managed to get away for a bit. Had a little drive to a castle and stuff, but other than that, all good.
And we are, of course, doing this podcast as per the previous couple over Zoom. So do bear with us if we are butting in more than usual. It's not Cookie's fault this time, as he's not here. So do bear with us. We're having that slight technical delay on here as well. Now, there's plenty going on in the world of football, and particularly... Cookie is here.
No, he's got a new place, isn't he? That's why he's not.
Oh, he has. Congratulations, actually. Before we start, congratulations to Cookie. He's moved into a flat. I've seen all the photos online, actually.
Great news.
He's painting, apparently.
Well, let's see how he gets on with the moving in process. I think he's got his curtains put up now. I think he's got a microwave, a kettle, TV's in there. That's it, yeah. I wonder what will be next. So, yeah, good luck to Cookie and congratulations to him on what is a new chapter in his life. Many, many congratulations. So plenty going on, of course, with the National League this week. But first of all, I think we're going to recap to the beginning of last month, actually. And there's been a fair bit going on in the community. And I'm just going to start with the hospital visit that we did to the Princess Royal University Hospital. And that was to assist the Champagne Group, who've been supporters of Bromley Football Club for many years now, do a food drop to all the lovely, fantastic, hardworking NHS staff that are working down there and really helping to get everybody through these very, very tough times. And it was a pleasure to be part of that. Neil, Jerry, Alan Dunn, Jack Holland, Luke Coulson, and Frankie Raymond. Hopefully I'm not missing anyone out there, were involved with that, and I managed to catch up with Neil after that for his thoughts on the club's community work. Neil, so we've just visited the Princess Royal University Hospital in Farnborough with the Champagne Group. Do you want to tell us a bit about what that was about?
Yeah, you know, the Champagne have been great sponsors of Bromley Football Club for a long time, and Sufian and Zidane, you know, have come down with some food, and because they represent, you know, and they sponsor Bromley, we thought we'd help out. So we handed over a load of meals from the Champagne to the hospital and to the wellbeing of Bromley. So, you know, it's a great gesture from the Champagne. We really appreciate it, and this is our way of helping out as much as we can.
And yourself, Jerry, Alan Dunn, and some players down here as well. I guess, obviously, all the players were quite keen to be involved. It must be difficult because obviously we have to limit the numbers that we can have at such things.
Yeah, you know, again, it was to help the Champagne out, you know, and you call on people that you know that are local and will help, and to a man they did. You know, we've said it all along, you know, everybody's going to need each other at some time, and this is our little gesture of helping the Champagne give out this food to the hospital and as a little donation and a little appreciation of what the NHS are doing for us at the moment, then, you know, we're going to jump all over it because it's only right that we give something back to the NHS.
And obviously seeing everyone again, social distancing was implemented, I should say, as well at this time. Everyone just wants to get back, don't they, as soon as possible, as soon as it's safe to do so.
Well, that's the first thing everyone said when we're back, what you heard, you know, what league you're going to be in and stuff like that, you know, with some of the rumours that are going around. But it was great to see them. You know, we speak every week, but you're on the end of a phone. So today to be able to actually see them and see that they're all healthy and well, and yeah, they can't wait to get back. The social distancing is, you know, is really strange in a football environment like we are. You know, no shaking hands, no hugging each other, you know, you've got a mask on and you're still smiling at a photo, so it's really weird. But yeah, no, it was great to see them. They're all healthy, they look well, and hopefully with the good news that we've been having about the restrictions just easing off little by little, we're hoping to be back very soon and you know, with some sort of normality.
Great to hear from Neil on that one. Always a manager that really, really looks to get involved with not only the team side of things and the footballing side, but also the community element of the club. He's always a really willing volunteer to help out wherever he can. So big thank you to Neil and the other staff members who attended that. Another thing that we've been involved with in the recent weeks was the Hayes School Food Bank, which was set up to assist families of children at Hayes School who are struggling a little bit at the moment. And it was a real pleasure, actually, to help out with that. We donated a range of items from the club, anything from cereals and packets of crisps to fairy liquid and other things like that. So once again, a real pleasure to be able to have that stamp in the community and help out what is a fantastic cause. Now, James, I'm going to come to you on this one. One of the most successful things the club involved with on the community side in recent weeks was heavily involving yourself and a lot of the players, Luke Coulson, I think, in particular. And that was the Miles for the NHS. Do you want to talk us through that?
Yeah, sure thing. So the story behind this, Miles Anderson, who's a player in the National League for some time now, formerly of Hartlepool United last season, he's actually been organising a fundraising campaign for the NHS charities. The idea behind this was following the cancellation of the London Marathon. The idea was you get a team together and you try and cover 26 miles worth of exercise, be it cycling, running, walking, jogging, you know, anything along those lines. And he actually successfully has managed to get quite a few National League clubs fully behind this campaign that he's set up. And before he got to us, I think AFC Fylde, Harrogate Town, Hartlepool and Aldershot Town had taken part. So we came in and Luke Coulson was a massive help in organising it as well. Himself alongside me really sort of struck up a good relationship with Miles actually over the 2 weeks that we were putting this together. And, you know, we knew the response from the supporters and everyone associated with Bromley Football Club would be incredible. And that was just proven on the day. So this was the 23rd of May. We're going back to now on a Saturday. And yeah, we had so many teams competing. I think it was well over 20, if not closer to 30 in the end. You know, different types of teams, you know, there's pairs, there was, you know, 10 people and even the Bromley Bells, you know, complete squad took part, who I think covered well over three marathons distance. So, I mean, that was just incredible to see. And obviously the whole point of this was to get people outside for that allotted time that they can exercise during the rules at the time, and also to raise some money for the NHS charities. And as the day was going along, I was keeping count and tossing up the total. And, you know, it was an absolute privilege to be able to report that we as a club, raised well over £3,000 for the NHS. So that was really pleasing to see. And as I said, I would have been wrong to say that the response from Bromley supporters and everyone associated with the club would have been less than anything like that. So, yeah, it was amazing to see and amazing to be a part of.
It was that. Sorry, Matt. Okay. I was just saying, it was so good to see on social media and that. And you saw beforehand, a couple of days before, that you know, supporters were joining up with a player in their team, for example, and things like that. And it was like you said, there's such a wide range of supporters, young and old, male, female, everything. And yeah, like you say, I mean, the Bromley Bells, they did like 3 or 4 marathons, didn't they? I think
between them.
I know on the day was good because even from the morning, early in the morning, you could see photos start coming in. So there was a couple that were on their bikes and they'd rode past the football club. And it was like really genuinely inspirational to sort of see. I know we had, between ourselves, we'd sort of put our little group together, hadn't we? And I stupidly said, yeah, no problem, I could do 5K. I made the mistake. I chose to do it at the football club. I thought, I'll go down to the football club early. I can open up gate one. I'll run around the pitch. You know, the worst choice I've ever made. It was absolutely baking hot. I'm running around the plastic pitch. And yeah, I think I managed about 4K in the end. But luckily, you guys were smashed it, I think, on your side, didn't you? What did you do, James? You were both on your bikes, weren't you, Matt?
Yeah, I can't compare my title to James. I did over 10K, but James, I think you did about 40K, didn't you?
I sort of got a bit carried away. I did a marathon myself on the bike, so
brilliant.
Yeah, I know, went a bit too far on that one. I just kept going. Yeah, exactly. But no, yeah, really great to see. I'm just thankful to everyone who took part and really got behind it, and also thanks to Coulson, who really helped organise this. He was the main driving force from the start. Miles was the one that got in touch with Luke I think I've been speaking to Miles recently, and there might be a new campaign in the pipeline. So, yeah, I've yet to speak to him about that. But if I do get any details, they'll of course be on the website, just like last time. And I'm sure we'll get a great response as we did before.
Brilliant, James and everybody. Great work on that front, and really a pleasure to be part of that in the media team group. So, moving on now, and we're going to continue the community theme, I think. We've had some really fantastic developments in that over the past few weeks, and a bit of good news in these very, very tough times. A lot of you remember Jeff on the pitch in the live BT Sport fixture last season on New Year's Day, where we hosted Sutton, receiving a £25,000 cheque from the National League Trust towards the club.
I wasn't believing it.
Community project, club's community project. And yeah, one of the longest handshakes I think I've ever seen on that clip.
come down at half time, you know, and we had, I think, one of the YouTube, which was brilliant for them, you know, live on telly, everything like that. And they got the camera lined up. And I think it was Colin from the National League, you know, like, stand there, shake hands, we're going to get a little bit on video, and we're going to go. Honestly, we were standing there for about 5 minutes. Like shaking hands and just, yeah, just moving a bit, because it was.
I was going through the BT footage of that game. I think it must have been a couple of weeks ago, and we were trying to do the, you know, the match day replays. And I remember getting to half time, and BT, when they give us the footage, they leave in the stuff that you don't see when they go to ad breaks. And yeah, there's about 5 minutes worth of footage of yourself just having a handshake with.
Live broadcast, it appeared as one of those sort of in picture things. So, like, yeah, while the game was going on or something, in the bottom corner appeared the photo of like half time, shaking hands and stuff. But yeah, it's better than my appearance on the one show, I think.
Yeah, so a really, really fantastic achievement for the club. The second year running, actually, we've managed to obtain the £25,000 grant from the National League Trust. So, very grateful to them for their support.
Sorry, man. Just on that point, obviously, I know the girls' football and everything was a big thing last year. What's the plan this year with the funding, and what projects are we looking to focus on?
Well, the great thing is that the two women and girls projects that we launch are able to carry on in their own right now without that funding, and they're self-sufficient, which is great. We've taken a focus on the over-50s. This year as well. We're going to be introducing a scheme called Sporting Memories, which is set up to help people in that age group on a social, physical and mental well-being level. And it's going to take the format of hopefully groups coming down to the club probably once a week. We're looking at and engaging in football-related activities. In particular, there's an element of it that looks at the dementia side of things, and actually how we can help people that are affected by that and bring back memories using the power of sport. And it's a really exciting thing for us. We're going to receive some training from Sporting Memories, which is the organisation who've set this up. But it's great that we've been able to get that push through, and it really is a milestone, I think, in this club's community sort of engagement history, in terms of the fact that it's the first time we've really been able to specifically target that age group and be able to offer them a support mechanism. And in addition to that as well, we're delighted to be continuing our work with disability in football with our weekly sessions, and also working with local special schools, which has been very emotional for me, having a sibling that went to one of those schools and had so many happy years there. So it's a real honour to be able to make a difference to those schools. And, you know, they haven't always got the facilities or the staff or the equipment that they need to be able to deliver this quality coaching. And for us to be able to have an impact on that, is you can't put it into words, and you can't place a value on it. It's exceptional.
Amazing.
No, that's amazing, man.
Thank you very much, both of you. It's a very, very exciting time. Sorry, James, I'm butted in.
No, just saying that it's amazing to see. And I can't wait to see all that come into place, and hopefully be a part of it as well. And yeah, just moving on from the community side of things, there's plenty else going on from our other teams across the football club. That's including our youth and youth academy. And if you head over to our website, which is of course www.bromleyfc.co.uk, there is links to travel pages. So all the teams from, you know, from our girls' sides, from our youth sides, and also youth academy. I think the youth academy is the under-12s. She's recruiting for the new season, whenever that may be, but hopefully with the news which we'll come on to very shortly, it hopefully won't be too far away. But yeah, there's plenty of trials up there and trial information. We also have some really exciting opportunities within our academy and also our professional development squad, which is the under 23 group. So with our academy, the applications are still open for any late applicants. And that is obviously for the next year starting 2020 in September. And with the under 23s, there are also new pathways available in association with the Bromley London South East College's Bromley campus. So yeah, to find out more information on that, head to our website. That's the best place to find the information on that. Also exciting for our academy is hopefully the fact that they'll be back in very small capacities in the following week. And I know a lot of work has gone in sort of behind the scenes, Jeff, to hopefully get that back into action shortly.
Yeah, I was going to say, obviously, a massive shout out to Hamo, Tom Beaumont, Sue Whitaker, all the work that they've done. Obviously, some people would have read the kept up to date with the news, etc., everything that's going on, and the potential return to school for certain pupils. And obviously, our year 12 pupils, obviously, with regards to some form of face-to-face contact during this period. And I think they've done incredible work behind the scenes to try and make that possible. And like you say, despite the club still remaining in lockdown and obviously in hibernation, as it were, there is a partial reopening in order to provide that vital sort of contact time with the pupils. So it's another positive sign, a sort of step forward, as it were. But like I say, nobody's taking anything for granted. It's under strict guidelines and strict measures, and you know, it's taken a lot to appease everything and get things signed off. But hopefully some kind of return to action for the academy in some form next week is a positive sign for us all to take moving forward.
Thank you very much, both of you, for the information on that. And now, I guess, the biggest topic of conversation and something a lot of supporters will have seen on Twitter and other social medias this week, particularly in the past couple of days, is the National League's plans regarding the playoffs and the new season. There was a board meeting of the National League on Wednesday and then a consultation via Zoom with clubs on Thursday, which took place, again, with all of the National League Premier clubs. And Jeff, you were on that call with Chairman Robin Stanton-Gleaves. Are you right to give us a summary just of what happened in that meeting?
Yeah, that's right, Matt. Myself and our Chairman Robin were on the call on Thursday, yesterday morning. Interesting. I guess is a word. Again, we've sort of spoke about this on our last episode. I think we're in a very sort of fortunate position, I guess, of not being heavily emotionally involved with regards to the outcomes of this season. And like I say, our most important need at the moment is to work out plans for the new season. So the topic of this season, we're obviously going to be pleased for it to be coming to a conclusion at some point soon, and it looks to be heading that way. To sum up, we were invited on the call. It was a divisional meeting, so there were two representatives from each National League club, and we were presented with a presentation from the National League, and it also involved a representative from the Football Association. And obviously, first on the topic was finishing this season and how it would be concluded. The points per game element has been used in the EFL, so the average points per game unweighted, number of games you played, you know, divided. There has been different solutions spoke about, being weighted, unweighted, and all those sorts of things, but very bog standard, your average points per game for the season, and that decides the league table. So Barrow obviously remain top, and then you've got the six teams that are in the playoffs. The government and DCMS guidelines have suggested that step one of the National League is considered an elite sport, which is our sort of understanding anyway. So when you talk about return to training for our players or anything like that, we've got to adhere strict guidelines and effectively those same guidelines that are in place for the Premier League and EFL clubs. So that's obviously been we've investigated a lot into that, and up until this meeting, you know, the start date of August was still in the calendar, and realistically it would have been 2-3 weeks away from returning to pre-season now. So there's been a lot of work going on behind the scenes for all eventualities. But this meeting definitely did give us some kind of guidance and structure for moving forward. The meeting started with the chairman and the CEO both reflecting, I think, the general mood about clubs and almost accepting the fact that some clubs felt like communication hadn't necessarily been what it could be during this period. And without necessarily apologising, I think the National League acknowledged that it hasn't been easy for everyone involved. But that said, the proposals then explained to us, and like I say, they would like to put forward a change to our resolution, change to our rules, constitution, etc., which will enable the league to be decided on the final league table to be decided on a points per game basis in all three divisions, so ourselves, the North and the South, and then for the National to play the playoffs. They would have to be played behind closed doors. There'd have to be testing involved, etc. So numerous costs involved for those clubs. But that's probably that's for them to decide. Because of the government guidance, it suggested that step two wasn't elite football. And therefore, actually, under the guidelines, there's no legal way of the North or South playing their playoffs. Which is obviously upset those South and North clubs that are involved in it, and some of them are questioning the guidelines and trying to fight, because it's very loose. It says the government guideline on determining who's elite, as in elite football club, is basically whether if a player derives an income for representing that football club, which you do at South and North, and you do at National. So they're going to argue about that for a while. The problem here is we've been given until Monday to vote on this and to agree to it, basically, because National League are putting it forward. They would like clubs to agree to it. In our league, what it means is if Barrow are going to go up as champions on PPG, the six teams are then going to play a playoffs. If a team in the playoffs doesn't want to compete, they can choose not to. And unlike the rules that are in place at the moment, they won't be penalised. At the moment, if you make the playoffs and you choose to compete, obviously you're bringing the game into dispute and there's fines, etc. However, we've got a 16 playoff in our league. Four clubs must want to play the playoffs at least. So if one club pulls out, that's fine. They'll play a five-team playoff. They'll find a way. I believe they might have had to do that in the South, was it last season? I think there was an element of that. And Stockport, who effectively miss out, they're in the playoffs at the moment, but they'll fall to eighth because of the PPG. They ask the question, if one of the teams in the playoffs choose to drop out, do they automatically get bumped up? And that's not the case. The rules don't allow it at the moment. So, yeah, it would effectively be a five-team playoff if one team chose to pull out. You look at the teams that are in there, there's been a very... I think Yeovil will bang the drum. They want the playoffs. I think Notts County have. Boreham Wood, I think, to be fair, were probably one of the first ones to say they didn't. So that's going to be an interesting one. Halifax are in there. Again, it's going to be interesting. But they're going to have their own meeting with regards to the financial implications. What is it actually going to cost for them to play these games? The proposal is that they play the playoffs within a 12-day period towards the end of July. So between, I think, the 18th and the 30th. So when you're talking about that, you've got your players that have got to come back. You've got to train at some point. So you're taking everybody off furlough. You're going to have all the costs of the players' wages. Plus, you're going to have the costs of the testing. Numerous figures have been chucked around, but I believe the tests can be anywhere between £150 and £200 a player, but they're going to have to be done, twice, three, four times a week, depending on how many times they're training and before they meet. Because remember, if one person gets it and has it at the same, while the team are training, the whole team are done for 2 weeks, which isn't going to work in a playoff timetable. So, yeah, interesting for them, but they're going to have to make that decision. But as a league, we're being asked to vote on it. At the other end of the table, because the government are deeming the step two not to be elite, effectively means those playoffs can't happen. So at the moment, Wealdstone and Kings Lynn, is it, are going to get promoted as champions. Kings Lynn currently second, I believe. They go top because of PVG. So York City obviously aren't very happy. That would effectively mean we'd have two teams coming up at the moment if we vote this through. So we'll only have the two teams coming up, one from North, one from South. Meanwhile, at the top of our league, we'll be saying goodbye to two teams. So we'll be saying goodbye to Barrow and potentially whoever wins the playoffs. Meanwhile, only one team's coming down from EFL, which at the moment is Stevenage, but you've got the Macclesfield points penalty hanging over them. And I believe PPG, there's a three-point difference and it could swing and Macclesfield could get relegated. But either way, we've potentially got only one team coming down because of the Bury situation. So that the sole aim of the National League is to make sure we have 24 teams. We're going to be two teams relegated, two teams coming up. We're going to have two teams promoted and one team coming down from the EFL. So we're going to be a team short. So effectively at the moment, the only team that will get relegated is Chorley. So if you're Ebbsfleet and AFC Fylde and Maidenhead, to be fair, you're all breathing a sigh of relief. But like I say, North and South clubs are not giving up on the playoffs. And I think York City have I just saw an email before we started. I think York City have put through a rule amendment proposal that they want the National League to put to clubs with regards to allowing the North and South playoffs to happen, which is going to be incredibly interesting because, you know, like I say, that does then open the door to three teams getting relegated from our league rather than the one at the moment, which is Chorley. And to be fair, even Chorley in this whole process are kicking up a fuss and wanting to put forward their own amendment because effectively, because of step three and step three to step seven, their decision was made by the FA, they're null and void. Effectively, Chorley could be the only team in the entire non-league pyramid system to be relegated. Which is quite something. And I know there's winners and losers and everything, and there's never 100% fair way to fix this. But that obviously I'm sure is a hard pill to swallow for them. But it's going to be an interesting couple of days. Definitely, we were expecting a voting sheet to come out today with a final resolution. That hasn't happened. I'm sure there's added complications now with the North and South and their view on everything. So yeah, quite a series of events really going on. One thing I will say to the National League is fair play. The presentation was clear and precise. I think loads of people went into it, all clubs, with all sorts of questions that they wanted to ask, and a lot of them were answered, or you know, the best they could be at the time. Moving on to this season, which was obviously our most important aim, we want to prepare and be ready and take advantage and be ahead and make sure. We capitalise when we do return. They were cautiously optimistic with regards to a mid-September, end of September date. And that was the National League and FA's view, but it was also backed up by their conversations and meetings with the government and DCMS. So when you look at it, potentially, it's been made clear to the government and DCMS that our level of football and actually League 2 and League 1 cannot be returning in September, end of September, without any fans, you know, which was important. I think what was definitely made clear in the meeting is that the people that are representing us and talking with talking with the government and DCMS fully understand it. They know we need fans. They know we need bars open. We know we need, you know, I'm not sure the South and North clubs agree that they've got their back because they've not been deemed as elite, but genuinely, we do have good football people that are there fighting our corner and you know, offering the correct guidance and are representing our level of football well. And like I say, we all know that everybody's safety and health comes first in all of this, and no one's questioning that at all. But you are looking for some kind of guidance and some kind of light at the end of the tunnel, at least so you can work towards something. And if that changes and gets shifted, then it's, you know, everything gets shifted along with it. But it was a positive step to see there's a potential of A, returning towards the end of September, B, the fact they understood that happened to happen with crowds. One of the points discussed with crowds was, how do you do that? You know, mass gatherings, etc. Ideas such as 30% of an overall capacity, for example, you would in the opening stages, you would be allowed. So there were ideas like that were on the table and being discussed, which again, looks just shows that that there's some kind of potential movement on that, and potential for us to, you know, with all due respect, financially support actually being able to play football again, because I think it's all been made clear. Even at League One and League Two level, football can't return without paying fans. It's just not, and even with it, even with the limited numbers, you know, it's financially precarious for any football club to be involved with. And I'm sure you've seen the figures banded about by clubs at the moment, just to basically be in hibernation and survive during this period. They're big numbers. But nevertheless, you have to try and look for the positives throughout all of this. And you know, there was a little light at the end of the tunnel, and we've got this guiding light of being able to maybe build up towards a late September return, and would usually be returning 4 or 5 weeks before that for pre-season. So all of a sudden you're looking at start of August, mid-August. But again, so many questions, and I know the fans listening will want to know ticket prices, season tickets, everything, all the details. And unfortunately, we're just not going to be at that stage yet, and not at that stage for a while. I think one of the most important things they stressed was everyone needs to be as adaptable as possible to this, because at the end of the day, we can begin all this and then a second spike comes and we're back where we are. So really interesting conversations, really proactive conversations. I think everybody tends to be on the same wavelength, especially in the National League, I believe, on how football can return and what we need to do. And another interesting one, sorry, I'm waffling on, but another interesting point was, should this happen again, they would like to have rules already in place that all clubs have agreed that should, for example, a season get curtailed again, should we start a season and then it be cut short because of another outbreak or another pandemic, etc. What will happen then? What will the process be? Will we automatically stop the season? Will it automatically be decided on PPG? Stuff like that. So that's an interesting one, because I presume that's probably the right way forward. I think it's probably good that we all agree next time this happens, or, you know, God forbid it should happen again, what's the outcome? How are we deciding this? So we don't spend, with all due respect, months not knowing what to do, how to prepare players' contracts, all sorts. I think that's about summed it up, Matt. I'm not sure. I've waffled on for a bit there. I'm not sure if there's any immediate questions that jump out, or observations, as it were. But one of the other stipulations, sorry, as well, was we are going to be expected as a step one league to return alongside the EFL within a reasonable time frame. Otherwise, the EFL could potentially hold the right to not relegate a side. Their relegation place depends solely on a league being there for that team to play in at the same time as the EFL. So it's not a case that, for example, the EFL can return in September and we return in December or something. If that does happen, then it means that they won't be relegating a side out of the EFL. So I think there's a general consensus there and agreement between both parties that we need to come back together, which is good. I think it's important that we're aligned with what's considered the professional game above us. I think what this has highlighted even more is what we've always said about a National League, and this step one is it's such a grey area. We got promoted to the National League. We didn't fill in a piece of paper and all of a sudden become full-time or something. You know, this is you're considered full-time because you're in this league, whether you train 4 days a week, 3 days a week or what. So, I think that's highlighted that. I think it's highlighted the grey area that we sit in between amateur and professional. And you're seeing it now at Conference South and North, where teams such as Dorking and Havant and Waterlooville are fighting to present themselves as being an elite team. I think the word elite is obviously a strange one. I think with all due respect, I think probably our level, we're probably pushing it if we deem ourselves as elite. But obviously that's a wording that the government has used at the moment to deem those who derive a full-time income from playing a sport, and that's why we've been put in that bracket, which is fair enough. But like I say, you can have the South and North clubs fight on. So it's going to be an interesting 3, 4, 5 days ahead. And I'm sure the stuff that's coming out on social media seems to come out quicker than when we find out. So I'm sure we're all going to be as aware of what's going on as each other over these next few days.
Well, Jeff, you've done an incredible effort there of summing up a two-hour meeting in the space of a few minutes. So not sure I could have done that any better at all. So thank you so much for that. Another interesting point I think it raises, I think we've spoken about it on previous podcasts, is if you look at Harrogate, for example, and the fact that they've obviously got the 3G pitch, will they want to participate in the playoffs? And actually, this whole COVID situation is possibly banging the 3G drum that little bit more.
I mean, they've basically said that there's going to be no closed season. You know, so there's no need, as it were, for a football club to finish their season and then have a break. So, you know, that's enabling the Premiership, etc., and Championship. When do they finish? Is it July? I think the FA Cup final's the 1st of August, isn't it, I think, or something like that.
Then, yeah.
You have a view to going straight into pre-season and starting in September. So, it's going to be a strange, really strange period. Sorry, man, I forgot your original question.
Just talking about the 3G element of it.
Yeah, I mean, Harrogate, with all due respect, and we'd love to be there ourselves, but I personally will be cheering on Harrogate in the playoffs. I'm sure of that. Simply because, like you say, if they do get promoted, who knows? I mean, the EFL are that adamant that 3G is not allowed. Maybe they've had conversations already and agreements are in place that should Harrogate find themselves in a position, then their ground sharing or whatever, I don't know. But they're certainly not going to have a 12-week period to rip up their 3G and install a grass pitch. So that's definitely going to be an interesting one to watch out for. I must admit, I haven't done it. I'm sure someone will, but I'd love to rewind our calendar and find out what would have happened if the season had been ended 2, 3, 4 weeks beforehand, where we would have found ourselves on points.
Yeah, interesting.
You can always look at what ifs, etc. But I think what's so sad is obviously the main reason this has all come about at the end of the day.
I mean, I guess we're in that sort of safety buffer where we're not really affected by anything that happens this season. I think if the table's decided on PPG, which it looks like it will be, we actually stay 13th, don't we? But for these clubs that are actually threatened with either relegation like your Chorleys or clubs that are being denied what they deem as their right to go up, a really, really interesting time.
It's a really, like I say, ebbs, feet and fold. You've sort of gone from our meeting, which was there's only one team getting relegated, which is Chorley, because we've only got one coming down from the EFL, two coming up, etc. So the North and South decided, no, we're going to fight this and we want our playoffs. If they get their playoffs, then three are coming down from our league, and those extra two are obviously Ebbsfleet and AFC Fylde. So, yeah, you certainly wouldn't want to be in their shoes at the moment.
Absolutely not. And again, a fantastic summary, Jeff. Thank you so much for that. And I'm sure we're going to be keeping everybody updated and abreast of things as they develop and as news and confirmations come our way. Moving on now, James, I'm going to bring you in on this one. We've had something of a kit room clearance, and literally you've been shifting everything about in the kit room. And we found a few gems, haven't we, that we're going to be offering out to supporters in the coming days.
Well, Steve Pinnell.
Unfortunately not Ian Jeffrey, nah, apologies.
Long gone that, Steve Cadell. More pressing matters. Club shop sale. We've got so much merch, Bromley merch to get out into the public domain. So
it's more more a kit room clearance rather than a club shop clearance, isn't it?
Very true, very true. We've replenished the club shop with some kit room stock. So yeah, we have numerous. It's mainly shirts. So it's lots and lots of match shirts, whether they've been printed up. There's also many that haven't been printed up. So they're similar to the replicas, but obviously they have the Vanarama sleeve patch and would have been worn by the players. All of them. There's so many. I actually don't know the actual number, but there is, you know, in each free kit, white, red and blue, we've got plenty to go out. I believe we're going to be relaunching a online club shop in some capacity just with these now. As I said, there's so many in various sizes, ranging from small to XL. Most would have been match worn, some huge names back as well. And Matt, just a quick mention to those who sponsored shirts this season.
Yes, thank you, James. So just to put those minds at ease, all of those individuals, groups of friends, families, companies that have sponsored players this season, these aren't the shirts that we're selling. The ones that you sponsored have all been safely stored away. These are the match-worn ones that the players have been wearing throughout the season. They've been safely stored away and all bagged up. As some of you have got two or three shirts that we've got to distribute to you. And we're going to get the players to sign those once they return. And then obviously find a way of fittingly presenting them back to you, as we really do appreciate the support and the commitment that so many of you have made. It's actually been our best season, I think, ever for player sponsorship. And it's a big thing for the club and also for the players individually. You know, they all really do appreciate the support and the sponsorship that you all put towards them. So huge thank you to absolutely everybody who's taken part in that this season. And like I say, we are actively looking for a nice fitting way to present those back to you once we can get them signed and once we are back up and running fully.
That's great to hear, Matt. I think that's us, isn't it?
Not quite yet. Just want to touch on the 100 Plus Club. Now, so many of you have really, really, again, made an effort to get involved with this, particularly in the past few weeks. Every season, we see an increase in membership. But in these past few weeks in the COVID pandemic, we've really seen a massive uptake and actually record numbers for the past couple of months. May was a record draw. And I've spoken to John Richardson, and a big thank you to him for coordinating it. He said that this month is going to be an even bigger draw. So another new record broken. And James, I know you've got the details for the May draw. And we're still waiting for the June draw to happen. But we'll obviously update supporters when that does take place.
Yeah, as you say, Matt, the May draw was a record number four numbers, if that makes sense. So 308 numbers in total. That would mean a prize fund of £777 going to or distributed between the five winners, and the same amount going to the club as well. I'll just read out the winners. First place you had Graham Booker. Second place you had Roy Oliver, which is a popular result there. Third was Gary Beale. Fourth, Arthur Duplock, and fifth was Edward O'Loughlin. So, yeah, amazing effort from everyone so far. 308 numbers. It's actually incredible to say that, considering it's called the 100 Club, or was called the 100 Club.
Just, the 100 Plus Club. Just on that note, I know John mentioned it. I think to be fair, he's probably had all close to 350 applications. So I think there's some supporters that have managed to have sort of joined up, and just that last bit, the setting up of the standing order, to actually set up the monthly payment of the £5 to the football club. I think some supporters are still yet to do that, and it's not the most straightforward thing to do, especially when we're during this pandemic as well. So I think you'll be amazed. I think those numbers for June will be a lot higher, and like you say, I think moving forward as well, we're on a fantastic. I know we've set a goal of 500. You know, we've had a massive jump really in April, May, and like you say, hopefully we're going to see a big jump in June. So we just got to really keep working towards that target. I mean, that would be absolutely fantastic. I mean, I think they've raised over 25 grand, is it, so far?
Yeah, that's correct. £25,821.10.
You know, and that's Arthur and John. An absolutely fantastic effort from them. I mean, I can't even remember the year. I think we had the snow. I think we were... this is going right back when we had the snow on the snow and the awful winter. I don't think we had a home game for probably 9-10 weeks. And I remember being in the old sports bar, and we'd sort of called on fans to come forward and give us some ideas and help us raise, you know, some fundraisers. And I remember John and John and Arthur came up with that wing, and you know, it's grown from there. And yeah, I think for us to get to the 500 figure would be absolutely fantastic. We're absolutely massive. You know, football club. Our average crowds are 2,000. The youth section, the community, everything we've got around us. I think it's more than achievable, and it's been really good. I know Smudge's in there. I know the chairman is, and I know Jerry.
Mark Cousins is in there.
Ourselves in. I think even Matt's got his wallet out. So
I actually came third. The last draw I announced, I actually had to announce myself. I got booed.
Oh,
I got heckled. Fix, they said. I promise you. The biggest surprise, I think, this month is that one of Jerry's numbers hasn't won. I think he's got about five or six numbers in that draw.
A few numbers, yeah. But again, I think all the details are on the website for that one. And I guess, again, especially for those ones that have banking on their phone and their apps, the setting up of the standing order should be quite straightforward. And like I say, it's £5 a month. And for those that are able to support it, it's greatly appreciated. And like I say, for John and Arthur to have with the help of supporters, raised over 25 grand for the football club. It's an absolutely fantastic achievement.
It is absolutely fantastic. And once again, a big thank you to John and Arthur and all the people who support the now almost 300 plus club, I guess, as we look to reach that 500.
How great would it be to call it the 500 plus club? That would be amazing.
That would be fantastic, wouldn't it? And that is the target. And I think, like you say, Jeff, that is very, very achievable in these next few months. Just before we go, we're going to move on to the supporters' question. And this week, or this month, should I say, we'd like to ask you to submit two of your favourite moments from the season on the pitch or off it. And we know a few of them are likely to be Bristol Rovers away and such like. But you can get in touch, James, if you'd like to give us the usual channels.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you reply to any of our tweets, that's at Bromley FC. You can also drop a message on the post when this goes out on Facebook. Again, just search for Bromley Football Club. You can also send us messages via Instagram. Again, just search for Bromley FC. If you email us as well, it's podcast@bromleyfc.co.uk, if that's correct.
That is correct. And don't forget, if you are dropping us a tweet, just give the hashtag Ravens Weekly as well, as it does help us to find your tweets a little bit easier. As I know, some questions in previous episodes have had so many responses. We've actually spent so much time actually trawling through the tweets to actually retrieve them and to read them all out. So big thank you to everyone who's listened this week. I think that is it now, unless James, Jeff, anything else?
I think we're there. So we've got through it.
I think that's everything. I think... we'll do our best to get Smudge and Hammo potentially on the next podcast. Obviously, first team now got a rough date to prepare for, start organising for, and obviously the academy have done an amazing job to hopefully be returning partially next week. So it'd be great to hear from them.
Yes, well, thank you, Jeff, and thank you, James, for joining me. Once again, a big thank you to everybody who's listened and GPM Group Specialist Fire Door Manufacturers for their support. Thanks again, and we'll see you soon. The town where I come from, in Bromley, in Bromley.